And I want to welcome you to the I Want to Know More podcast for this first week of October 2024. I realize Monday is the last day of September, but this is the full first full week of, or the first week, partial week of October, beginning with Tuesday. On the podcast today, we're going to 2 Samuel chapter number 8 once again as we look into what David does after God gives him the great notice that God's going to build him a house. And this scripture contains some really interesting details. And so listen all the way to the end, and there'll be some interesting details toward the end that we'll pick up with the next podcast. All right. Go ahead and turn to 2 Samuel chapter number 8. Verse number 1, 2 Samuel 8, 1. And after this it came to pass that David smote the Philistines and subdued them. And David took Metheg-Alma out of the hand of the Philistines. And he smote Moab and measured them with a line, casting them down to the ground. Even with two lines measured he to put to death, and with one full line to keep alive. And so the Moabites became David's servants and brought gifts. I'm going to just make a quick observation there. This is not the main point of the message, but I have preached a message on being in the third part. Two lines for death and one full line to keep alive. The third part. The Bible has several allusions to being blessed by being in the third part. Anyway, verse number 3. David smote also Hadadezer, the son of Rehob, king of Zobah, as he went to recover the border at the river Euphrates. And David took from him 1,000 chariots and 700 horsemen and 20,000 footmen. And David hocked all the chariot horses, but reserved of them for 100 chariots. And when the Syrians of Damascus came to succor Hadadezer, king of Zobah, David slew of the Syrians 22,000 men. Then David put garrisons in Syria of Damascus, and the Syrians became servants to David and brought gifts. And the Lord preserved David whithersoever he went. And David took the shields of gold that were on the servants of Hadadezer and brought them to Jerusalem. And from Beta and from Berothai, cities of Hadadezer, King David took exceeding much brass. When Toai, king of Hamath, heard that David had smitten all the host of Hadadezer, then Toai sent Joram his son unto King David to salute him and to bless him because he had fought against Hadadezer and smitten him, for Hadadezer had wars with Toai. And Joram brought with him vessels of silver and vessels of gold and vessels of brass, which also King David did dedicate unto the Lord, with the silver and gold that he had dedicated of all nations which he subdued, of Syria and of Moab and of the children of Ammon and of the Philistines and of Amalek and of the spoil of Hadadezer, son of Rehob, king of Zobah. And David got him a name when he returned from smiting of the Syrians in the Valley of Salt, being 18,000 men. And he put garrisons in Edom. Throughout all Edom put he garrisons, and all they of Edom became David's servants. And the Lord preserved David whithersoever he went. And David reigned over all Israel, and David executed judgment and justice unto all his people. And Joab, the son of Zeruiah, was over the host. And Jehoshaphat, the son of Ahilud, was recorder. And Zadok, the son of Ahitub, and Ahimelech, the son of Abiathar, were the priests. And Seraiah was the scribe. And Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, was over both the Kerethites and the Pelethites. And David's sons were chief rulers. All right. So we see early stages in David's kingdom here. Now, this is after the Lord has said, I'm going to build you a house. I'm going to establish you a house. And so David goes out with confidence, knowing that the Lord is with him. And he goes and he conquers. It's not that he lets them come and fight him. The enemies were subdued, but subdued does not mean they're gone. See, Subdued does not mean they're gone. He went and he was actively going against them before they had a chance to strengthen themselves and come against him. See, you need to fight your enemies while they're subdued. And so the enemies were subdued, and those enemies were all those bordering countries with all the false gods, which is a type of sin and fleshliness in the life of the victorious Christian. Canaan land living is a type of victorious Christian living. And that's what we need as Christians to consider. Canaan is not directly the type of heaven, because there's no sin in heaven. There's no Amorites or Ammonites or Moabites or Canaanites or Philistines in heaven. There's nothing to fight in heaven. The enemies are not subdued. They are gone in heaven. We will never have to deal with the sins of this world again. We'll have a body incorruptible, Paul tells us. And that incorruptible body is not capable of sin. It's not tempted by it. It's not possible for it to sin, because our body will be like his, and he will be like us, and we will be with the Lord forever in perfect, incorruptible unity. Not just immortal, but incorruptible. That's the big difference between that body and Adam's body. Adam's body was corruptible. It could be touched by sin, and it was touched by sin. But this new body will not even be able to entertain the thought of sin. It will be perfect, and it will be incorruptible. Incorruptible is better than perfect, because you can be perfect and then get marred, which is what happened to Adam. He and Eve both were perfect. They were absolutely perfect, but they were temptable. They were corruptible. They could be made imperfect. That new body will not be able to be made imperfect. And that's the major difference between Canaan as a type of the victorious Christian life and what a lot of people consider Canaan to be a type of heaven. And, you know, I'm not going to argue with anybody over it. I'm not. But I am going to preach that the ites that David was fighting here, the enemies that were being subdued, you won't find any of those in heaven. You're not going to have to subdue your enemies in heaven. And those enemies, of course, being sins. And each person has a different sin to contend with. You know, the Israelites, the different tribes, they had different enemies on different borders. And so David is going up toward the north. He's going up to the north, and he comes upon Hadadezer, king of Zobah, wherever Zobah is, and he smites him. And we talked about the numbers last week, and how it seems like it's a contradiction on the surface, but in reality, it's completely reconcilable. It is, because number one, 700 is a subset of 7,000. And so if you kill 7,000, you have definitely killed 700. And footmen covers all of them. And so it's 20,000 total. That includes horsemen is a subset of footmen. And so they were both, all soldiers were trained to be footmen. And so, after the horses are dead, they're footmen for sure, you know, and that's the way they did it. One interesting part of this that we didn't go over last week was the fact that David hawked all the horses. And that's how you pronounce that word, hawked. Hamstrung, that is, making it where it can't run, and essentially killing the animal by hamstringing it. Hamstring, of course, that's the major tendons in the legs, in the rear legs, and without that, a horse cannot pull a chariot. What was David doing here? The Bible clearly states, and we went over this a while back, the Bible clearly states that the king is not to multiply horses or go back into Egypt for the purpose of multiplying horses. And so he kills all but 100 of them. He reserves 100 for chariots. So he's taking the same stance that he took with his wives, saying, well, I'm not going to multiply them. I'm going to stay below a number, and we'll call that number multiplying. As long as it's not more than, say, 20, we're not multiplying. And for horses, you know, 100 horses, 100 chariots, not that many. So we're not going to even bother. We'll just take the best horses and keep them and make sure we have some chariots. You're letting sin in the door when you do that. And we talked about what happened with David and his wives about a year ago was when we started that. We spent a lot of time talking about David's multiple marriages and what multiple marriage, how the Bible speaks of multiple marriage through the scriptures. Because it was about a year ago, we probably got pretty close to finishing that up. David is, what's the term? Towing the line. Towing the line means to come right up to the edge and not cross it, but come right up to the edge as close as you can. Now, I realize towing the line has different roots from that. It's talking about putting your toes on the line in the floor and standing still. I understand that. But I also understand that you get right up to the line and you look over, and that's the source of the term Sabbath's day journey in the New Testament. You weren't supposed to journey on the Sabbath day. But the day before, people would go out and they would walk out and see how far they could go before they considered it to be a journey. And then they'd mark it, and that was a Sabbath day journey. And they had that set up so that people could get away with going and being out of their houses and not completely resting. People have a tendency to do this. People want to stretch what they are allowed to do. And they want to not necessarily be in God's perfect will, but be in God's permissive will. God didn't say I couldn't, so that means I can. And that's the wrong attitude. The attitude should be, God didn't say to do it, therefore I won't. That's God's perfect will. You see the difference there? God didn't say I should do it, so I won't, versus God didn't say I shouldn't do it, therefore I can. And so David is latching on to this phrase, multiplying unto himself horses. And so he's keeping some, when in reality, he should not have kept any. He should not have kept any. That was a mistake on his part. Furthermore, some of the enemies end up paying him tribute. The Moabites, the Edomites. Now, the Moabites and Edomites and Ammonites were special cases because they were kindred. They weren't just of the world. They were kindred. And so David is compromising with worldly followers. That's like the person who's trying to live right, compromising with Christians. Say they're born again, but they're not living like it. They say they are, and they're living fleshly, and compromising with those fleshly Christians, and saying it's okay to make these compromises. And David is partnering up and taking tribute from. And no, the Bible, the Lord does not give Israel instruction to destroy Moab or destroy Ammon. It also doesn't give instruction to take them for tribute. But that's what David did. And here's an example of the old expression, the enemy of my enemy is my friend, with this fella Toai. Now, if you go to Second or First Chronicles, it's Tou, T-O-U instead of T-O-I. Just a different spelling, same man, same name. Just a different way to spell it. And so the pronunciation is probably somewhere between the two. And it's just, Hebrew doesn't have written out vowels anyway. And so if something relies on a vowel sound, the pronunciation is a bit uncertain in some cases, and this is one of those cases. And so here in 2 Samuel we have Toai, or Toi, and in 1 Chronicles we have Tou, or Two. And so, you know, you can have different spellings of the same pronunciation. For instance, T-W-O, T-O, and T-O-O are both the word two. All three, rather. How do you get T-W-O to make two? Now, there's you a mystery, right? Two is probably how it was originally pronounced, but to make sure the number looks different from the other words, we got to spell them differently, even though they're pronounced the same. Well, this king, Toi, or Tou, he said, you conquered my enemy, and therefore I'm going to give you gifts. And he gives him gifts, and he becomes his friend. Now, that doesn't mean this guy Toi was in league with David. He wasn't really his friend, but maybe he was thinking, you know, keep your friends close and keep your enemies closer, because they were not. Toi was not Israelite. He just was an enemy of the man that David had defeated. And, you know, treating people as allies because they have a common enemy can be dangerous. This goes toward politics. In fact, this is politics. That's politics in a nutshell, building a coalition and being in league with someone that you would not otherwise be in league with, but the only reason you're their ally is because you have a common enemy. And if that common enemy goes away, guess what happens? Former friends and allies are at each other's throats. And so you better be careful, child of God, becoming allied with someone in the world, or even with a worldly Christian. You need to be careful. There's great danger. There's great danger in that. And of course, the enemy is not above spreading lies. And there's a lot of that happens this time of year. They'll spread lies. They'll make it sound like it's the truth. Then after the election's over, oh, we were mistaken. They got the result they wanted. So, okay, it's easier to ask forgiveness. And somebody will take the file for the mistaken information. And the person lost the election anyway. That has happened so many times. That has happened so many times in American politics. It's very corrupt. No matter which side you're on, it's very corrupt how it works. And everybody uses dirty politics in one way, form, or fashion these days, at least at the national level. The local level, I can't say that in that much generality. But at the national level, yeah. And at the state level even, yeah, it's a dirty business, politics is. Because the idea is getting enough people to vote for you to where you win. And that is the goal. That's the only goal. The goal is to get elected. And then you figure out how to govern. And, you know, you tell people things to get elected. Well, this guy Toi, he comes and he gives David gifts and befriends him for a couple of reasons. Number one, he got rid of Hadadezer. And number two, he doesn't want David to be mad at him and come after him and conquer him. And so David subdues his enemies all around. Now, it sounds great on the surface. Sounds like David is really, really doing well. And in one way of looking at it, he is. But if Canaan is a type of the victorious Christian life, do you really make bargains with your sins? Do you just subdue them? Well, sometimes that's what happens. Especially deep-seated sins that you've let fester for years and years and years and years. Sometimes you just have to make a deal with them. I know that sounds horrible. It does. It sounds horrible. But that's what David is doing here. He's making deals with the enemy. This fellow Toi was not Israelite. He's not a friend. He's the enemy of David's enemy. Mm-hmm. That does not automatically make him David's friend. But he's acting awful friendly because he doesn't want to get blown off the face of the map like Hadadezer did. I wouldn't either. But our sins will sometimes try to bargain with us, and we'll get them subdued, but we don't ever actually get them taken care of completely, because we are comfortable with those sins. They're a place of comfort. They're a place of escape. Those sins are. That's why people drink. That's why people do a lot of things people do. There's a lot of things that people do because they want to escape their current situation. And it takes their mind off of how bad their situation is to just change the situation. And there's a lot of things that are going on in this world today that's like that and that's in those lines. But folk, we as Christians need to remove the sins, not just subdue them. And yes, David removed Hadadezer. He removed him. But he only subdued the others. And here we see Amalek once again. One of the worst lines in the book of Exodus. Then came Amalek. After a great victory, then came Amalek. And Amalek was supposed to have been completely eradicated, but they never did it. They never really got Amalek fully removed, even though they tried. Even though they tried. The Amalekites would be thorns in the flesh of Israel for the rest of Israel's existence. The book of Judges tells us, says they didn't get rid of them, and God said, I'm going to leave them. I'm going to leave them and not let them get rid of them completely. Child of God, you know why you're fighting the same old sins over and over and over and over? Is because when God gave you the chance to really eradicate them, and he said, I will help you get rid of this if you'll just do that and get rid of it in your life. You know why it's still plaguing you? Is because you didn't mind God and get rid of it all the way. And God says, all right, I'm going to let you live with that. I'm going to let you live with that. And that's going to be a thorn in your flesh the entirety of the rest of your life. And I'm not going to eradicate it from your life so that you'll learn that you should. When you're given the opportunity to completely eradicate sin in your life, take it. Don't hold back. Don't try to make a league with it. It will come back and it will bite you. Leaving Amalek alone, leaving some of these other ites alone, not completely destroying the Philistines, because there's a hidden thing down here in the scriptures. And that's close to the very end where it says, Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, was over the Kerethites and Pelethites. The Kerethites and Pelethites were the king's guard. And guess what Pelethite is another word for? Philistine. David bought the services of mercenary Philistine soldiers. And those were the Kerethites and Pelethites, the king's personal guard that he paid. He paid for their services as guards. And they were bound to him. They were not Israelites. We need to study that, don't we? We should. We should really dig in and study that. And maybe at another time, we'll dig into that word Pelethite and Kerethite and show you exactly where that comes from and show you exactly why David's actions here. He was protecting himself from Israelites, from loyalties amongst brethren by hiring the enemy. He's protecting himself. That's interesting, isn't it? We got a list of who's who here. A list of who's who with Joab and with Zadok and Ahimelech and some of these others we don't know the names of. They're not said anywhere else. But we got the recorder, which would be the treasurer. And then we've got the scribe, who would be the secretary, taking down all the notes. And so this is David's cabinet, you might say. We'll dig into that Kerethite and Pelethite business a little bit later. All right. I want to thank you for listening to the podcast today. The I Want to Know More podcast is a ministry of Brother Lamar Owen. I'm out of the Macedonia Baptist Church located in the Silverstein community of Transylvania County. To correspond with me, please write to Lamar Owen, P.O. Box 212, Balsam Grove, North Carolina, 28708. Again, that's Lamar Owen, Post Office Box 212, Balsam Grove, North Carolina, 28708. And join me here again next week for the I Want to Know More podcast.